And we are on air. It is Monday night, September the 12th, and Fan for Racing Radio is on air for our Kansas NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound Off. Joining me for tonight's show, I guess last week was Sal Sagala week. This week is Jay Huseman week. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, you've mentioned it before. It's great we have such an expansive team now. We can help each other out, fill in where needed. I know Sal had some work he was doing there, going to hang around, I think, L.A., wasn't it? So not able to fill or be on this week.
Right. I think he was working up in the Las Vegas area. But, yeah, he had some work he was doing and was out of town. And Sal... and you were busy last Thursday, so Sal stood in for you on Thursday, and so you're here tonight. So really appreciate the cooperative effort there, and tonight we do have a lot to talk about. We're reviewing all of the races out at Kansas Speedway from this past weekend, as well as in our first half hour, we'll talk about the latest short track news. We'll review the ARCA Menards Series race. It finally took place on Sunday morning at Kansas Speedway, and we'll include some updates from the ARCA East and the ARCA West Series. At 9 o'clock tonight, we have a guest tonight, Christian Rose, driver of the number 42 at Cook Racing Technology in the ARCA Menards Series, joins our conversation. He finished 7th in the Kansas Lottery 150 this weekend. And when we complete our conversation with Christian, we'll also cover the NASCAR Truck Series race at Kansas. That was an elimination race, Jay, so that was a pretty exciting race. And then after that, starting at 9:30, we will review the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series at Kansas Speedway. We're going to end our episode, of course, with our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off at 10, and we always look forward to the conversations that come up there. I know one of our Hot Topics will probably start today, but we'll end on when we do our podcast, which, by the way, is a programming note for all of our listeners. We are doing a podcast on Wednesday that we will publish for everyone on Wednesday night. And that's because, Jay, we have racing taking place at Bristol Motor Speedway on Thursday night.
Well, and that gets into this time of year. We got a couple of Thursday night races. So, yeah, make the adjustment to do the podcast. I know you said Mike was going to be available to still do Hot Topics. That's great. We can all get together in the afternoon and still put out the program. Because obviously Wednesday there's going to be some follow-up to the topics we're going to talk about tonight. Hopefully get a little more information.
Exactly what I was getting at. Thank you, Jay. Yes, so we're going to start some topics tonight, but I got a feeling we'll kind of finish talking about them again on Wednesday when we do the podcast. So if you listen tonight, you'll want to definitely tune in on our podcast on Wednesday evening. As we preview the races that are coming up this weekend at Bristol. So with that, let's go ahead and get into the short track news. I do have here from Racing America, let's start there, Jay. The entry forms are available for the 51st running of the Winchester 400. That is a big event. I'm sure the entry list is going to be huge. That race will be taking place in Winchester, Indiana on Sunday, October the 16th. But they've had some drivers like Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Eric Jones, David Stremme, Ross Kenseth, Scott Hance, Brian Ross, Travis Braden, Ryan Lawler, Boris Jurkovic, Bobby Parsley, Noah Gregson, Jeff Croquette, Stephen Nassi, Carson Hocevar, and last year's winner was Sammy Smith. So those are some of the names that have raced this race in the past. It's going to be fun to see who's on this list for this year in October.
And this is one of those events, again, that as we've expanded our social media or platforms to watch racing. It's going to take some to get to, say, the level of the Snowball Derby. But Sal talked about one out in California that at and I can't think of the name of the Irwindale. We got a couple throughout the Mideast in this Winchester 400. Obviously, 51 or 50 races so far, it's growing. And you mentioned the name. So you know the names that have been there are going to be on it. That's where they make their name. The owners and drivers are watching them from the cup level. So that's where they get noticed. And this one has become a really big one for the Winchester 400.
Also, there's a note here that the All-American 400 tickets are on sale. So it's one of the biggest weekends of the year for the All-American 400 at America's Favorite Track, Saturdays and Sunday, October the 28th through the 30th. And that's in Nashville, Tennessee. So the All-American 400 includes the ARCA CRA Super Series, the Southern Super Series, the ARCA Midwest Tour. There's a lot of racing that's going to take place there. So if you want to get a ticket for that, I suggest you call early. That's at the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway, and you want to definitely get those tickets as quickly as possible because I'm sure they will sell out.
And that's another event. That one's a little closer to me. I attended, I believe it was 2 years ago, Ty Majeski, Chandler Smith, Bubba Pollard, JoJo Wilkinson. We've had her on the show. These are the names that show up there. And I'm drawing a blank. Mason Dingus is another one we've seen starting
Dingus,
to make some
yeah.
Xfinity starts, truck starts. So these are the names that you want to be keeping an eye on. And then the late model tour series, Steven Nassi, Bubba Pollard, to mention. Those are names that have been constant there in the late model series.
Definitely, and they're all top competitors. Some other news that I noticed at Racing America is that Timothy Peters, a lot of people will remember him from the Camping World Truck Series, he's going to return to his late model roots along with his crew chief Marcus Richmond to compete in the Triple Crown Valley Star Credit Union 300 at Martinsville Speedway on September the 24th. He's going to be competing with R&S Race Cars and will also field out entries for Jonathan Schaefer and Connor Jones. Though they will be his teammates there at R&S Race Cars. So it's good to see Timothy Peters. They talk more about this may be his last race. So if you want to see Timothy Peters race, you want to get out there to Martinsville for this race on September the 24th at Martinsville.
I know a few years back when he did a fill-in, Return to the Truck Series, I can't remember who was injured or replaced, but he did a fill-in. We had hoped you and I, Sharon, both. He is one of those in the garage area. If you ever get a chance to meet, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, so we were kind of hoping that developed into a little bit more more races. It didn't happen. So, and you know, it comes to that point where everybody comes to the end of their career. So I hope that if he's able to, he keeps racing. But if this is the end, like you said, you definitely want to go out and get to see him. You get the chance to meet him. That's just a pleasure.
Yes, indeed. Also, Carson Hosepa, who raced and earned a second-place finish in the race on Kansas on, what was it, Friday night, returned back to Michigan and claimed to win also on Saturday night in the JEGS CRA All-Stars Tour presented by Chevrolet Performance at Birch Run Speedway. It was a Triple Crown Championship 100 event lasting 95 laps, and after passing Kyle Crump to take the lead on lap six, Hosevar would have to fight off challengers on five restarts to finally set up a long green flag run and get the checkers after a disappointing Friday night in the Truck Series on Friday night. So out of Kansas Speedway. So he did get a win this weekend, which was really good for Carson Hosevar.
He did, and this is one of those that truthfully makes these drivers even that more dangerous. As we see some drivers I know Carson Hocevar is still getting his career started there in the truck series, but we've seen even some of the top cup level drivers go back to these late model races, working on their skill, working on seat time, just being in the car. Maybe a little bit different car, but seat time on tracks is seat time. And Carson Hocevar is one of those, the more he gets, the better he gets, the more dangerous he's going to be. He was so close to getting his first win, which would have moved him on in the Truck Series Championship. You mentioned that heartbreak. I don't think we've heard the last of him for sure. Ben Rhodes went through it a few years ago, and he came back and won a championship.
No. Okay. Also, I'm going to move over here to Flow Racing. So we can cover some of the events there. We talked last week about the Taste of the Epic Eldora Speedway during the World 100, and a lot of things happened in that weekend for race fans. And if you missed it, I would suggest that you go to the quick links over at Flow Racing, and you can catch some of the racing that took place out there at Eldora last weekend.
Well, and that was one of those, if you're a dirt fan, you were keeping an eye on. I mentioned working at Jackson Saturday night. So they had the laptop up in the booth that was on as well. We were obviously watching Spencer Hughes out of Meridian, Mississippi. But we saw Superman. I mentioned this going into it. Superman Jonathan Davenport picking up his fifth World 100 title.
Yes, he did, and that was pretty exciting for him. But you're right. There were just so many, and that was just one of the races that took place out at Eldora this weekend. It was a big week of racing out there.
You know, I think it was either. Now I'm trying to think if it was Thursday night or Friday night. They completed the Dream, which was rained out earlier in the year. So they finished that up, and I believe Brandon Overton, if I'm not mistaken, ended up winning that one. Was a lot of racing. You're right. And then all the preliminary races that they got to get to just set that field. 80-some cars, I believe, were there, and they only bring in 24.
Yep, it's pretty amazing. Also, in Sweet Springs, Missouri, Buddy Colboyd surged to very late in the race to score a sweet USAC midget win. He's another driver that comes over to the Truck Series now and then, so it's good to see him get that win. And also, Tony Stewart's adding four starting spots to the World 100 at Eldora, so he kind of increased the number of drivers that could participate in that race. So that was pretty cool to see.
And that's one, as a promoter, I've worked with several that do things like that. You see that? I mean, they want the best field there for the fans, for the drivers. They know how hard it is just to get there and to try and make it. Unfortunately, you have some issues, whether they be of your own doing or mechanical. So Tony Stewart doing an honorable thing. They're giving those couple extra chances there with those provisionals.
Yes, indeed. Okay, now, you know, you remember last year in the Arca Menards series, Corey Heim looked like he was on his way to get a win, and at the end of the race, it wasn't him that won the race. So he's had this race marked on his calendar all year long to get back to Kansas Speedway, and he got his redemption in the Kansas Lottery 150 at Kansas Speedway on Sunday morning.
And we knew he was a favorite going into the race, and you're right. He definitely had some little bit of extra motivation when a driver feels they had one taken for him or got away from him. They certainly come back with that vengeance and enthusiasm to make sure they don't do it again.
Yeah, Corey Heim had the car to beat until he crashed out of the race while racing Drew Dollar for the lead, and it ended his day. So he couldn't wait to get back there. 20-year-old from Marietta, Georgia, dominated the Kansas Lottery 150, turned his second Arca Menards Series victory of the season for Venturini Motorsports. Heim started on the pole in the number 20 Toyota and was practically untouchable. He only gave up the lead twice due to pit strategy, but each time he quickly regained the lead once the race resumed. The final challenge for Heim, though, came following a late caution flag on lap 98 when Raja Karuth crashed in turn one after a tire failed on his number six Chevrolet. The green-white checkered start followed, and Heim quickly pulled away from the field to comfortably score his ninth career ARCA Menards Series victory. So that was pretty cool to see. And Nick Sanchez had a big night, too. I think he finished second in this race, but he also secured a championship.
Okay, and that does then lock up that championship. We've been talking about this battle throughout the year. Unfortunately, you mentioned there, Raja Karuth, that's been one of them battling, had some
issues.
Well,
I'm talking about the General Tires Super Speedway Challenge.
Right. That one,
okay.
The four races on the Super Speedway throughout the year. I'm trying to pull up my ARCA page. It's not loading for some reason. The four select races throughout the year, one of many in the ARCA Menards Series that they have the championship within the year, not the overall championship. That hasn't been decided yet.
It's only on those tracks that are paved ovals that are greater than 1.5 miles in length. Sanchez did finish runner-up, and that allowed him to secure the General Tire Super Speedway Challenge Championship for Rev Racing and his team owner, Max Siegel. So that was kind of a big deal for that race.
Sorry, I apologize for that. The video popped up, but not the page.
Okay, I'm going to go to the race results, if you want to go there, Sal, Jay.
Yep.
Usually I'm calling Sal Jay. Now I'm calling you Sal. Okay. Corey Heim was the winner, followed by Nick Sanchez. Sammy Smith came in third. Then it was Daniel Dye and Ryan Huff who rounded out the top five drivers there. Coming in 6th through 10th was Parker Chase. Our guest, Christian Rose, had a 7th place finish, the first time for him in the ARCA Menards Series. Amber Balkin finished 8th, and Tony Breidinger in 9th. John Garrett rounds out the top 10.
And as you mentioned there, the points battle, look at the points in a minute, but Nick Sanchez finishing 2nd. Behind Corey Heim, going to stretch that out a little bit, picked up the Super Speedway Championship. Daniel Dye, though, 4th place, still hanging tough. And unfortunately, and I don't see, I know he slid back a little bit there, Raja Karuth ended up in the 12th position. So that's going to gap it a little bit. Nick Sanchez trying to finish off this ARCA Menards Series Championship.
Yes, indeed. And let's go ahead and cover the points for the ARCA Menards Series, Jay.
All right, let me load that. It's been super close throughout the entire year, getting to be a little more spaced out. Nick Sanchez is your leader now by 12 points. And we've seen the three drivers kind of stay within 9 points all year. Like I mentioned, Raja Karuth, unfortunately, another tough finish, is now back 38 points. We got 17 of the 20 races in. Now, Sanchez does have the three victories, which is really what's tipping the scales in his favor right now. Daniel Dye, 17 races, 15 of them have been top tens. That's most of any driver as far as top tens. Rounding out the top 10, you got Greg Van Alstyn, Tony Breidinger in 4th and 5th, and then Sammy Smith with just 13 of the 17 starts but 3 victories, still 6 in points. Amber Balkane, Brad Smith, Zachary Tinkle, we've had him on the show, and Taylor Gray rounding out your top 10.
Yes, indeed. You're right. The battle has been at the top of this list. Raja Karuth, you got to feel for him. He's had 2 races in a row with finishes that did not help him in the point standings. So you know that next race, he's going to be looking to kind of gain some ground there. So these next few races are going to be pretty interesting. Let me just kind of cover when that next race is going to be. Actually, the Busch Beans 200 and the Sioux Chief Showdown will be September 15th, 6:30 p.m. at Bristol Motor Speedway. So this is one of those three-for-one nights, because that's also the season finale for the ARCA Menards Series East. So three series, one race, all at Bristol Motor Speedway. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1 at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So, in fact, this is one of the reasons why we're not doing the show on Thursday night, because September 15th is on Thursday night.
Now that you say it in that manner, that's also somebody's birthday show. Wow, how about that?
Oh, is it?
My son reminded me that. He asked about coming by to see him, and I'm like, why? And he's like, yeah, I got one of those annual events coming up. But this is a
Early birthday.
Thank you. This is a huge weekend at Bristol. You mentioned that of the final of the Sioux Chief Showdown. It is a elimination race for the Cup Series. It's the regular season championship finale for the Xfinity Series. So just an absolute huge weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway. And I can't think of a better place to have so many different events like that on such a great facility.
No kidding. It's going to be an exciting weekend. And just remember, it all starts Thursday night. The Truck Series is racing after the ARCA Menards Series on Thursday night. So Friday night is the Xfinity race, and Saturday night is the Cup Series race. Just so you know, too, the next race for the ARCA West is the Napa Auto Care 150. That race will take place on October 1st. At 6:45 p.m. Pacific time, that's 9:45 Eastern, at All American Speedway on the West Coast. That will be available on Flow Racing for this weekend, so definitely check that out. But all these series have a lot going on. This is the season finale for the ARCA East. Let's go ahead and cover their points.
All right. While I'm pulling that up, I left the Truck Series out there. It's still a big weekend for them, as that's the first race of their next round. We just had some eliminations We'll talk about in the Truck Series recap, but that starts their next round. And how important is it to start a round off with a good race? So just as important for the Truck Series as well.
Yes, indeed.
On the ARCA Menards East standings, Sammy Smith, we've talked about, he's been running some Xfinity Series races, trying to lock up his second ARCA Menards East Series championship. And with the stat line he's got, it's going to be tough to beat him. Six races, four of them have been victories, all six of the races in the top five. Built himself up a 33-point lead. Now, Taylor Gray, second, does have one victory, five top fives and five top tens. Mentioned 33 points back. Leland Honeyman, three top fives, five top tens, is 47 back. Then you got Stephanie Moyer at minus 102, along with Brad Smith at 102 back. That's your top five. Our guest tonight right now, Christian Rose, made five starts in the ARCA Menards East Series, sitting sixth in points with two top tens. Jake Finch, we've talked about him several times. Jesse Love, Rajah Caruth, and Donald Feig rounding out your top 10. Those have all made only three and four starts, it looks like.
Yeah, the only other driver to have a win in the ARCA East is Brandon Jones. He's only raced one race, and he won that race. So, but in case you're wondering how the numbers add up, with four wins for Sammy Smith and one win for Taylor Gray, Brendan Jones is the sixth winner this season in the ARCA East Series. So definitely looking forward to that. season finale. Also, the Sioux Chief Showdown. I'm hoping they've got the updated numbers here, and they do.
All right, let me see if I can pull that one up.
There's been 9 of 10 races raced already this season. It's the series within the series, 10 races of the 20 races of the Arkham Menards series that are designated as part of the Sioux Chief Showdown competition. It started at Phoenix. They raced at Iowa, Berlin, Elko, Mid-Ohio, Lucas Oil, Indianapolis Raceway Park, Watkins Glen International, the Milwaukee Mile, DuCoin on Dirt, and now this week they'll be racing on Bristol.
And here you're going to see a, and here you're going to see a little bit different. Even though the Arkham Menard series is a big part of this, the change up, because as you mentioned, drivers, these are on the shorter tracks. Younger drivers such as Sammy Smith, Jesse Love, Taylor Gray can run all the races. So those are your top three. Sammy Smith currently sitting at 375 points. Jesse Love at 349. Taylor Gray 343. Right behind him, Daniel Dye at 342, and then Nick Sanchez at 335. So while Nick is leading the main Arkham Menards series, he's fifth in this short Sioux Chief Showdown battle. So that tells you the mixture that we get when we get to run these races.
Exactly right. Now, the ARCA West still has some different races to race. They'll be racing October 1st, as I mentioned, at All American, but they also have October 14th in Las Vegas Bullring, and I'm going to be there for that race. And then Friday, November 4th, is their season finale at Phoenix Raceway. So three more races on the books here yet for the ARCA West. Let's hit their point standings. Jay, are you still there?
Nope, sorry, I had it on mute there for... Nope, I'm here.
Okay.
For the Arkham Menards Series West here. There we go. We got Jake Drew has kind of taken command of this one. Another wonderful stat line. This one didn't start out as strong, but he has come on as of late. 8 races now, 4 victories. Again, all 8 races in the top 5. That's tough to beat. Puts Tanner Rife at minus 52. He's got 2 victories, 4 top 5, 6 top 10s. And then Cole Moore right behind him at minus 55. Todd Souza having a very good season at minus 60. Those three just within 8 points themselves. And fifth place, Joey East is at minus 87. Rounding out the top 10, though, you got Takuma Koga, Bridget Burgess, Paul Pedronicilli Jr., Austin Herzog, and then Andrew Tuttle. And I know we talked about this. Pedronicilli's didn't run the Oregon race, so only 6 races there for the Pedronicilli.
Yeah. but now, for the Arkham Menards series, there are only 3 races left in that series as well. They'll be racing Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend, but also on October 1st, that race at Salem Speedway, and their season finale is October the 8th at Toledo Speedway. So that series is winding down as well. So a lot to look forward to this year with this season winding down and seeing how all of these standings end up in the Arkham Menards series east and west.
Certainly, and you see some great names that we're going to see either become champions or battle for it for sure. Talking about Jake Drew, he's run a couple of the Arkham Menards main series and Sioux Chief Showdown races, but we saw Jesse Love, champion, come from the West, battling in that, and Sammy Smith. And we've already seen, once he turned 18, I don't remember if he did a truck race. I know he's been running some Xfinity races.
All right. Our guest is here now, though, Jay, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him into the queue, and we'll get started with our interview with him. Joining us for tonight's show is Christian Rose. He's driver of the number 42 at Cook Racing Technology, and a big sponsor of West Virginia Tourism. So, Christian, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. I love coming on.
Well, I was so excited to see you get that seventh place finish at Kansas this weekend. I know in the pre-race info that was sent out, that's exactly what you were shooting for. And it's your first top 10 in the ARCA Menards Series. So congratulations on achieving your goal there.
Hey, thank you so much. I mean, that was our goal, run all the laps, learn as much as possible, and then hopefully we were going to come out with the top 10 if we just ran our race, which is exactly what we did. I think we had fifth place speed in the race car. We just tried some strategy. It just didn't work out for us. But I love the call from our team. We were aggressive with it, and it was just didn't work out the way we wanted it to. But to come home with a seventh and run with the cars we ran with and show we had speed was definitely a pleasant result for our team and the good building block going forward as we continue to try to finish the season strong.
Okay, you mentioned going forward. Are you going to be in Bristol this weekend? Or is it Thursday,
yes,
I guess?
Yeah, so Thursday race is a little different, but yeah, we're going to Bristol, and I'm very excited for my first time at Bristol. I know it's going to present its own set of challenges, and it's going to be a interesting new place for me, so it's going to be pretty much the same goal when we show up to Bristol. Let's go. Let's run all the laps. Let's try to keep the race car clean, as hard as that is at a place like Bristol, and just come home with a good finish and good notes to where we can build and continue to string these finishes along and build momentum for 2023.
Okay, now that's also the season finale for the ARCA East. ARCA West and the ARCA Menards Series, they still have three races. Do you have any other races beyond Bristol that you're looking at?
Yeah, so we have Toledo and Phoenix still circled on schedule to wrap this thing up. So possibly messing around with the idea of the Bullring if some things can come through on that end in Vegas. But outside of that, that should be – we're wrapping up here for 2022, and it's been a fun season. And I look forward to what we can do towards the end of the season. We put some of the best efforts, in my opinion, from the summer months forward, and we just haven't had a lot of luck on some of those races. But the speed's been there, and now we're finally starting to get some of the results for the hard work that Bruce and all the guys are bringing to the racetrack every week. So hopefully we can continue to build on that for the next three races and just show what we can do and continue that momentum in 2023 to where we can put together a strong season next year.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you said next year. I was just going to ask you that. What are your plans for next year?
We're still working on everything. I'm hoping to have some stuff to announce here in the next couple to 8 weeks or so. We're working hard to secure sponsorship and make sure that everything is where we need it to be. And hopefully I can give a lot more information on that. But obviously we'd like to be in the same spot we're in this year and then compete full-time in the ARCA Menards Series and hopefully have a few spot truck starts here and there and just try to do whatever we can to stay in a race car as much as possible.
Sounds like a good plan, Christian. We have our co-host here tonight, Jay Huseman, and I know he has some questions for you as well. So, Jay?
All right. Thank you, Sharon. Christian, congratulations on that top 10 finish. Several of my questions are going to revolve around that, and Sharon, you guys already kind of hit on a couple of them. First off, the momentum that brings, you know that you're capable of it, getting them knocked out. When you go from, say, 15th to 10th place finishes, you start getting those 5th to 10th place running up front. What are the things in the shop that, other than just the, obviously, positivity from the crew, but in the shop itself, in the cars and whatever that you see, kind of intangibles that you see changing?
Yeah, I mean, to start off with that, to answer that, the easiest thing is when I climbed out of the car, you can just see the guys' faces. Everybody was amped up. You know, the team's known all year. They built really good race cars, and they've given me opportunities, and I've made rookie mistakes, right? And we've had our fair share of issues as the years progress, but we've seen the speed in those races. So to finally start putting these results together, Milwaukee was the 15th, but, hey, we ran every lap. We didn't put a scratch on the race car. We just struggled with a tight race car. The flat tracks just have not been our go-to racetracks this year. But when we went to Kansas, we knew the speed we brought to Pocono and Charlotte this year. We knew it was a good opportunity for us to go out and showcase what we had. And at the end of the day, we could have easily been a fifth-place car. You know, we ran fifth with the fifth-place car for the majority of the race, and we were able to be in front of them in the majority of the race. So I think it shows what we can bring to the racetrack, and we just continue to build off that and get better. But if you look at the guys and see how pumped and excited they are after a race like that, it just tells you the whole story of everybody feels good. You know, we're getting the result we deserve finally, and hopefully we can continue to build those as the season progresses.
Second question is I know as a driver in a team, you want to win every race or run good every race, but there's also the realistic. You mentioned Bristol, first time there, the lofty goal, in my opinion, having watched a lot of races at Bristol, is to have a clean race car at the end of the night there. But on a first time to a track like that, does that change your mentality as far as what to expect going into a race like that?
I wouldn't say it changes the mentality. The mentality is to go still put the best foot forward and best showing. But I'd say in a way, if you're looking to change something, my goal and our team's goal is no matter what happens, run all the laps, keep the car in one piece, and come home with something to build off of. It's Bristol. It's a very tough place. It's an animal of its own. I've grown up my whole life watching leaders get wrecked there, last place getting wrecked there. You know, wherever you run, you're not safe on the racetrack at Bristol. So it's just our goal and our personal goal is to show up, run every lap, learn as much as we can, not be in the way, and build off of that. That's the best result we can come home with from Bristol.
My last question was there. You alluded to it. You already got things in the work for next year, maybe expanding your schedule a little bit. Runs like this that you can see the team's progression. How much does that help when you're selling to a sponsor? I mean, I know they know the team, but to have the results like that of the selling point to that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Obviously, the better you run, you know, the more you're going to be on camera, the more the sponsor's going to be in the light and everything else. And that's what we're trying to do is showcase West Virginia tourism as much as we can. We have a beautiful state, and we're trying to bring people into our state. So the more people that see that, realistically, the better – option we better chances we have of bringing sponsors like that back on board. So building a good finish and getting these finishes the way we've gone the last 2 weeks, it's been huge momentum for us going forward in those talks and being able to share, like, look, this is where we're building and showing that we talked about this. We were going to have some rookie mistakes as the season went. It's my first time ever, really my first full-time season ever in racing my whole life. So we knew the ups and downs that were going to come with it. But as it progressed, we knew at the end of the season, if things are going the way it should, we should be getting these results. And now we're starting to get them. And that's a very positive take to sponsors and show what we can build going into 2023, knowing we've run a lot of the tracks that we're going to come back and run again next year. So it only allows us to come back and be stronger and better with experience on those racetracks. So it's a good selling point in that factor.
Well, that's good, and we hope to hear some of those announcements as you get them finalized. Before I turn it back over to Sharon, once again, I just want to say congratulations on the run. And I think I said this the last time I was able to talk to you here on the show. I love the fact that you have the state behind you, if you will, for the West Virginia tourism. I think that's awesome to see that the state is investing in racing and using it as a promotion. So. Such a great sponsor you got there. And I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon for a couple more questions from her.
Yeah, thank you on those points. I mean, our tourism numbers are the highest they've ever been. So it's a good feeling to know when you bring a sponsor on board that I'm not going to take any credit in those numbers, but I know we didn't hurt it. So, I mean, that's a very positive thing for us to take and use. That it's been awesome to have the state back us and really try to share our mission and our goal and see it succeed is just a very positive thing. So thank you. I appreciate that.
And speaking of that, Christian, I know you've done some really cool things with the West Virginia Tourism this year. What have you done lately with them?
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of crazy. It's been a whirlwind, right? Like, when we're not racing, we're normally up in the state or around the state doing things. So we did the West Virginia State Fair. We had a very good turnout and a lot of positive. We actually had people there just for us, which was a wild experience, to say the least. I've never really had anything like that happen. So that was very cool. we also got to go up and we participated in the business summit over the last couple of weeks. And then went right from that to I did a charity event with the Boys and Girls Club and tried to help raise money for them as a spokesman at Summit Point Raceway. And got to be the Grand Marshal and represent West Virginia tourism and everything there pretty much in my hometown. So that was a very cool experience. So it's been a busy couple of weeks and Coming up, we have the Pittsburgh Pirates. We're throwing the first pitch out there October 3rd. So we're staying busy and trying to promote the state as much as we can.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think they've been a good partner of yours this year in the Arkham and Art Series, as well as the East and the West races that you've had. And I've told you this before. I'm going to say it again. I still think you have the best-looking car out there on the track.
Well, I appreciate that. You're not the first one to say that, too, and it's really cool to see so many people, you know, tell us that. And I agree with you. I'm biased, but I think we do have a very good-looking hot rod on the racetrack every week.
I agree. Okay, so now we're winding up here and everything. You've raced with Cook Racing Technologies this season, and they've been a good partner of yours as well. But we don't always get a chance to really shout out the people that are working with you behind the scenes. So let's take a few minutes to kind of give them a shout out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many people, but Chris Knight especially, he's been unbelievable for us this year. He's everything that we could do on and off the racetrack. Every time I text him and ask him, you know, he's sending emails the moment I send him a text, and it's to help bring things on board, help bring sponsors on board. He's just been incredible for us. So I can't say enough about the guy and everything he's done for us this year. It's just been a godsend. I tell him all the time of him coming on board and helping us out this year.
Chris is a really good guy. You're lucky to have him with you.
I'm very fortunate. There's a lot of things this year on the analytical side and everything we do with sponsors I would be completely lost with if we didn't have him. So he's been a good friend more than anything. And on the business side, he's been amazing too. So I can't thank him enough. He always treats my wife and myself like we're family, and it's very cool to be able to have somebody in a sport that you can lean on that kind of front. And it's been awesome to have him.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. Christian, I know you've got races that are coming up here. I may have asked you this before, and I apologize if I have, but I'm going to ask it again. When you're not racing in the Arkham and Art Series, are you racing in other series? Are you doing any late model racing or iRacing or anything along those lines?
Honestly, I haven't had the opportunity as much this year. Next year, that's going to be a big focus, is just trying to stay in something weekly. I want to be more hands-on in a race car, whether it's a pro-late, super-late, you know, whatever it comes down to. I don't care if it's a go-kart, trying to stay in a race car and learn as much as possible to get better as a race car driver. I know that's really what it's going to come down to is seat time for somebody like me who hasn't run a lot. So that's a big goal, but when I'm not in a race car, I do watch a lot of film. And I've used the simulator a fair amount this year, and I think the simulator has helped me, but I think there's a fine line on a simulator of only being able to help a driver so much on a racetrack unless it's actual manufacturer-backed simulator, because it gives you break points, it gives you throttle points, it allows you to see a layout of a racetrack, but you really don't get the feel of what an actual race car is doing. So for me personally, I know a lot of drivers would disagree with that and say that it helped them a ton. For me, it's just not I have to feel a race car moving around, actual with the sound and everything else to really get that feel and be a better race car driver. But it does help a lot on other fronts of visuals and, you know, points around the racetrack. But watching film is a big part for me. I watch a ton of film. I woke up this morning, first thing I did was watching the 2020 Bristol race in the fall, and I'm going to continue to watch those leading into Thursday, and I think that's why at some of these racetracks I've been able to jump out and not be too far off right off the bat on some of these faster places, just watching film and trying to learn and watching the in-car camera.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've really enjoyed watching you throughout this season, and I hope before the season's out we get another opportunity to chat with you. A lot of season finales coming up there with Toledo and Phoenix, the two of the races you mentioned you're going to be at. So hopefully we'll get another chance to talk to you before it's all said and done. And we sure hope you are coming back next season, and we'll wait to hear that news as well. I might be at the Bullring, so if I get a chance, I'll look you up.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I mean, I would love to come back on whenever. Just let us know, and I'd love to do this. It's a pleasure to talk to you guys and share our story. So whenever we get that opportunity and talk about race weekends, I mean, I'm all for it. So I just can't thank you guys enough for allowing me to have an outlet and speak about everything we're doing in the race car and living a dream. Honestly, that's what it comes down to. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate you bringing up keynotes, like people that help us out, like Chris and everything. It's very cool, everything you guys do.
Well, thank you. We really enjoy chatting with you, Christian. And like I said, we'll look forward to the next time. Now, folks can follow you on Twitter and Facebook. Is there,
yeah,
are there other
Facebook
places?
And yeah, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Twitter is C Rose Racing, at C Rose Racing. Instagram is Christian Rose Racing, and the same, or is Christian Rose. And then the same for Facebook is Christian Rose Racing.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Chris. We'll look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. Have a great night.
Okay. Good night. All right. That is Christian Rose. Again, he's the driver of the number 42 Cook Racing Technologies Chevrolet. And he just had a great finish this last week at Kansas, finishing seventh. He went into the weekend saying he felt he could get that top 10 finish, and he went out there and did it. I thought that was fantastic.
I know we've had him on a couple of times throughout the year. It's great to see when they do get that next step, first top 10. And he mentioned as they progress and build to be able to follow along with that and have him on when they hit them high points. The enthusiasm he brings, I love the partnership. We talked about that with the West Virginia Tourism. I love to see that and what he's doing for them in return for the sponsorship. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. It is. It really is. Okay, we're going to have to move on now because we've got the truck race at Kansas. That was an elimination race. It was the inaugural Kansas Lottery 200. The race winner was John Hunter Nemechek at the age of 25, driving the number 4 Mobil 1 Toyota for team owner Kyle Busch, and his crew chief was Eric Phillips. It was his 13th victory in 143 Camping World Truck Series races, his second victory and 14th top 10 finish this year, and his first victory and 5th top 10 finish in 6 races at Kansas. Carson Hocevar finished 2nd, posting his first top 10 finish in 3 races at Kansas, and his 11th top 10 finish this season. Ryan Preece finished 3rd, posting his first top 10 finish in 1 race at Kansas. Corey Heim, who won the ARCA race, finished 7th. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now, this race was, like I mentioned, an elimination race. And although it looked like Carson Hocevar had that long shot bid in order to win, John Hunter Nemechek spoiled that. With less than a lap left in Friday night's Kansas Lottery 200 at Kansas, John Hunter Nemechek passed Carson Hocevar and spoiled one of the unlikeliest long shot gambles in the long history of the Camping World Truck Series. With this less than a lap left at Kansas, John Hunter passed Carson Hocevar and was able to end up winning that race. He made the last lap pass and won the Lottery 200 at Kansas for his first win at Kansas and 2nd of the season and the 13th of his career. Nemechek made the pass over the number 42 of Carson Hocevar, who appeared to be on his way to his first career win after a pit strategy call put him in the lead on lap 106 of 134 of the 134-lap race. After falling short of the win, Hocevar, along with past champion Matt Crafton, failed to advance to the round of 8 playoffs. That was a heartbreak because he put his heart and soul into that race, Jay. Ryan Preece finished 3rd, followed by Zane Smith, Grant Infinger, Chandler Smith, Corey Heim, Ty Majeski, Colby Howard, and Christian Ecke were the remainder of the top 10 finishers. The round of 8 playoff drivers include John Hunter Nemechek, Zane Smith, Grant Infinger, Chandler Smith. Okay. Ty Majeski, Christian Eckes, and the reigning champion, Ben Rhodes, who finished 13th, and then Stuart Friesen, who finished in 20th. Nemechek won the pole, and both of the opening stages en route to his first race, en route to his race win. He led a total of 88 laps. There were also 11 lead changes among six drivers and four cautions for 25 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 118.023 miles per hour. Your thoughts about those race results in the top 10 and the playoff drivers?
Well, first thing I'm going to look at is the top 10, not just the winner of John Hunter Nemechek, but look at the top 10. As you mentioned, it was a playoff cutoff race. Seven of the top 10 drivers were those playoff drivers. It is tough to gain points on somebody when you're that close. Now, the way to avoid that is get that win. And Carson Hocevar, you mentioned it, ever so close. Not the first time this year, but this one really, really important. I can't even imagine the kind of heartbreak you mentioned that he had. I thought he handled himself well post-race. It was tough, you know, that disappointment. But he is one of those we're looking at week in and week out. When is that win coming? Unfortunately, it's not going to move him on in the playoffs if he were to get it now the rest of the season. But I think we could still see him then as a spoiler, if you will, in one of these upcoming races at the end of the year.
Yeah, real quick, I want to mention in his post-race interviews, he said, I think I'm going to be a bridesmaid at my own wedding. He's finished second so many times, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, but the good thing from that, the takeaway is, you know, if you're second and second and second, that win's coming. You know
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
So, that's the good thing from it. John Hunter Nemechek, I know in his post-race, might have been pre-race actually, talking about his season from last year to this year. Last year, I think he had five wins by this point, was kind of the heavy favorite going into the championship, said they didn't win it. So he's not real concerned that we haven't seen him win as much throughout the year. Win when it counts, and this certainly was one where you definitely win. He felt okay in points going in, but that secures it, gives him some more bonus points as we look, coming up we'll look at the reseeding with points. So still very confident, and the Zane Smith, the regular season champion, finishing fourth, Grant Enfinger, got the first win of the playoffs to move himself on. And then I say you got Chandler Smith, Ty Majeski, and Christian Eckes all in the top 10 where they need to be. And we did eliminate two, and I know I think, Sharon, you had put it up for Hot Topics. Matt Crafton is a regular perennial championship contender, has been eliminated. He is one that I don't even know if I can repeat his words, but kind of, I think back to Tony Stewart. We don't deserve to be here. We got in, but we didn't deserve to be here. They have not been the strongest this year, and he was aware of that, and he said they were lucky to get into the playoffs. So we'll see how they rebound, especially after such a finish here at Kansas, back in the, 15th position.
Big surprise, though, was Stuart Friesen finishing 20th. I did not expect that, especially at a track like Kansas. And then Ben Rhodes finishing 13th. Those are the drivers that finished outside of the top 10 were a little bit surprising.
Well, and there again, it goes to the competition. I mean, you got to be on top of your game. And we got other drivers that may not be in the playoffs. You mentioned rookie Corey Heim in the KBM JBL Toyota, got another good finish. Ryan Preece, when he steps into that number 17 for DGR, and he got a third place finish. We've seen what he can do when he gets into a truck in spot rides. So the competition is really tough, and I think that's where Matt Crafton kind of falls in. The other one I want to shout out there, Matt DiBenedetto. I know they've kind of tailed off. They started this season really strong. I really thought he was going to get a win and be one locked into the championship. But they're still right there, 12th place, top 10 team. Could be a spoiler throughout the year. I think we got to look at it as a contender for next year already.
Yes, indeed. Now, I want to get to the points, too, before we run out of time. So let's real quick cover that.
All right. As we slide over there, mentioned it was the cutoff race. So there's a reseeding, if you will. Oh, it should have been loaded. Oh, come on. There we go. So the reset of the points, the eight drivers that have moved on reset at 3,000. Why does it have nine? Matt Crafton and somebody else was eliminated. Who else was eliminated?
Carson Hocevar. He missed
it by
3 points.
Oh, yeah, in ninth and ten. There you go. Okay, so with the reset, they get 3,000 points and add in their playoff points. Zane Smith, your regular season champion, goes back to the top of the leaderboard at 3,037 points. Chandler Smith, second at 3,028, is nine back. John Hunter Nemechek, mentioned that win, puts five more points in his playoff bucket, so he started with 3,024. Ben Rhodes, 3,017. Stuart Friesen at 3,013. Then you got Ty Majeski, Grant Infinger, and Christian Eckes, your final three. They're at 3,008, 3,007 for Infinger and Eckes. The two tied, Infinger... Actually, here we go down to four drivers, don't we? This next round,
mm-hmm.
We cut down to four.
Right. The next, let me pull up the schedule here. The next elimination race for them, let me just pull that up real quick, the schedule, truck series. Okay. Now, for the truck series, they just had the elimination race at Kansas, the playoff round of eight. Will be three races. That's Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend. And October 1st, it'll be at Talladega. Their elimination race will be October the 22nd at Homestead, Miami. And that will be the last race before the season finale for the championship, where four drivers will compete for that championship on November 4th at Phoenix Raceway.
So there we go. Ben Rhodes right now in the fourth spot would be the cutoff line at 3,017. He's got 4 points over Stuart Friesen. Then you got Ty Majeski at 3,008, Grant Enfinger and Eckes, Christian Eckes at 3,007. They're only a point apart. And go think back to this race. If they're only one, two positions apart in the top 10, gaining points, stage points throughout the race, and that victory. I mean, the victory is everything. You get the victory, you are moving on. So we'll see how this plays out over those three races. Talladega right in the middle of that being such a wild card.
Yes, it is. And I'll tell you what, you're right. Every single point counts. Ask Carson Hocevar. I'm sure he's looking back at the season on where he could have found three more points to get him into the playoffs this season. He missed it by just 3 points. Matt Crafton by just 10. And I'm sure Matt's doing the same thing. So these guys are going to be looking for every single point they can get. And that's why it's so intense in these playoff races. Okay, we're going to move on now to the Xfinity Series. The Xfinity Series race was the 22nd annual Kansas Lottery 300, and the race winner was Noah Gregson at the age of 24, driving the number 9 Bass Pro Shops True Timber BRCC Chevrolet for Rick Hendrick Motorsports with Luke Lambert on top of the pit box. It was his 10th victory and 127th Xfinity Series starts. It was his 5th victory and 18th top 10 finish this season. Also his first victory and first top 10 finish in 5 races at Kansas Speedway. Justin Allgaier finished second, posting his 10th top 10 finish in 13 races at Kansas. And it was his 17th top 10 finish this year. Ty Gibbs in third, posting his second top 10 finish in 2 races at Kansas. And Sheldon Creed, who finished 11th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now, for the Xfinity Series, their next race, of course, is at Bristol Motor Speedway. But we're talking about the race where Noah Gregson beats the rain in the Xfinity Series race at Kansas in what is turning out to be a banner season for Noah Gregson, the driver of that number 9 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet, scored his 5th Xfinity Series victory of the year in Saturday's rain-shortened Kansas Lottery 300 at Kansas. Now, following the conclusion of the second stage in Saturday's race, Mother Nature put a stop to the Xfinity Series race that Noah Gregson was out front at the time, awarding him his win. And as we mentioned, the 5th of the season, Justin Allgaier, we mentioned, finished 2nd, giving Junior Motorsports the top 2 spots. Ty Gibbs led a race-high 66 laps and finished 3rd. The pole sitter, Brandon Jones, placed 4th, with Ross Chastain rounding out the top 5. Then it was A.J. Allmendinger in 6th, Sam Mayer, Sammy Smith. They've got Sam Mayer.
Sammy Smith, then Sam Mayer.
Huh? Yeah, they've got him in here
okay,
twice. Brett Moffitt made up the rest of the top 10. So I don't know how Sam Mayer finished in 2 spots here, but Gibbs won the opening stage, his 5th stage of the victory, stage victory of the season. Gregson won the 2nd stage and now has 13 stage wins on the season. There were 6 lead changes among 4 drivers, 4 cautions for 18 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 113.687 miles per hour. Let me go back to these race results and give you, I don't think they're going to show me Sam Mayer in 2 spots. It was 6th, it was A.J. Allmendinger, Josh Berry, Sammy Smith, Sam Mayer, and Brett Moffitt. I don't know why they listed Sam Mayer twice, but Josh Berry finished in 7th. Your thoughts, Jay?
Well, we had a lot of action there, and you hit the nail on the head. At that point, they knew the weather was in the area really, really close. They were racing the rain, which means they raced each other really hard. I listened to this one on SiriusXM radio on the road. I know Ty Gibbs, and I can't remember who it was he tangled with there at the end. He made some apologies.
Justin Allgaier.
There we go, with Justin Allgaier. He made sure to apologize there. Got a little over-aggressive, and you can't say you blame him. I mean, they knew it was going to end at any point.
Oh, he just took a right turn right into him, or a left turn.
Well, like I said, I didn't get to see that one yet. I do know that Ty said he made a big mistake there, a huge mistake. Fortunately, didn't cost either one of them points as far as position, but possibly the win. And I know there's the argument, Noah Gregson maybe wouldn't have won that race. That's part of it. And they all knew they all had to play the same strategy there in those final laps, final pit stops, final strategy. So congratulations to him. When we look at the points, we'll talk about that. So many different drivers, they got different agendas. A.J. Allmendinger looking to – he's all but secured, I think, the regular season championship. That gives him extra bonus points. You mentioned rookie Sheldon Creed. He's trying to get in that final spot. We'll look at that. With his teammate Austin Hill right behind him. And Ryan Creed, that's who he's battling.
This was kind of the penultimate race for the regular season finale. They end their season at Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend, Jay. So that's why these
guys are racing
hard.
And there's going to be a couple of battles there, and it's going to be one of those because a bad finish or a DNF could really change your season if you're in that latter part, Sheldon Creed and Ryan Sieg. And so those two are going to have that going on. Like I said, A.J. Allmendinger, he's going to be looking to lock up that regular season championship, give himself some added bonus points. These other drivers, like Noah Gregson, picked up that another victory and stage win. That just adds to their playoff points. He added 6 playoff points. So after that race, they take the locked-in drivers and reseed them and give points based on that. That's a huge factor setting them up for the championship run.
Yeah, and don't forget the 5 wins. that he has on the season. That's huge.
Trying to think in there some other storylines to look at. Another good run there by Big Machine Racing. They had Ross Chastain in the car, got a top five. We've seen that throughout the year. They've rotated different drivers. I think that team is on a really good track. Don't know if they've announced yet for a full-time driver for next year, but to see that team run with one driver for the championship, I think would be really interesting.
Yes, indeed. We'll have to wait for that news. A few drivers finished a lap down. Mason Massey, Garrett Smithley, Ryan Vargas, C.J. McLaughlin, Bailey Curley, two laps down. Jesse Owuji, three laps down. Now, Brendan Poole had a transmission issue that took him out of the race early. And Jeb Burton had an engine issue very early in the race, lap 51, that took him out of the race, so that was too bad. It did end under caution with the rain that came on the track, but, yeah, this was quite a race.
Another one, when you look back through the field there like that, a couple I wanted to mention, Rajah Caruth got another one of the Xfinity starts with the number 45 team, finished 25th. Completing laps, I know, and then mentioned Sammy Smith, wherever he finished there, A spot is what I have him, in the Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. Had quite a few starts now that he's 18 and can run all the tracks. I don't know if we're going to see him in the ARCA Menards Series or come directly into the Xfinity Series. We'll tie that into hot topics here with some hot topic, big hot topic we're going to have coming. A lot of moving pieces there that... As you like to say, once one domino falls, there's going to be some others to follow.
And there's some big dominoes falling this week. Okay, now race 25 of 33. What are the standings after Kansas for the Xfinity Series, Jay?
A.J. Allmendinger is your points leader. He's got 1,003 points. Ty Gibbs is at 965, which puts him 38 points back, and I believe 60 points is the points that can be earned, max points that can be earned in one race. So like I said, AJ's got it all but wrapped up. I can't say
for
it's
the regular
100%
season championship.
But, right. Comparing that though, look at AJ Allmendinger has three wins, two stage wins, 17 playoff points. He will get 15 more if he wins the regular season championship, which would put him at 32. Ty Gibbs, five race wins, five stage wins, already has 30 points. Noah Gregson, sitting fourth in points, but has the five wins and 13 stage wins, has 38 points. So once they do the reset, Noah Gregson, right as it stands right now, barring what happens this weekend, it would be Noah Gregson with the point lead, followed by Ty Gibbs, and then your regular season champion, A.J. Allmendinger. It depends.
Mm-hmm.
Either starting second or third. So he needs those points to catch back up with you, if you will, when they do the reset.
Yeah,
the other one
he
in
would
there,
be in third, and Allmendinger would be in fourth.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a huge difference, and that's why it's so important, you know, Noah Gregson putting himself in that position. He's already locked in. It's picking up those extra points. That's a huge, huge factor. Third place is Justin Allgaier. He's got three wins, 22 playoff points built up. Mentioned Noah Gregson. Fifth is Josh Berry. He sits at 16 playoff points. Austin Hill, the rookie, 11 playoff points coming off his two wins and a stage win. Brandon Jones, seventh, has 6 points. Sam Mayer there with 2 points. Riley Herbst doesn't have any. Daniel Hamrick only has two. Landon Castle doesn't have any. And then Ryan Sieg in 12th place, and here's where it gets interesting, at least from a fan perspective. I'm sure Sieg's doing some sweating and sleepless nights. He's at 578 points right now in the playoffs. Sheldon Creed is at 565, 13 points behind. Stage points throughout the race, and then that finish, we mentioned it earlier. Carson Hocevar needed the win because he came up 3 points short. You know, Sheldon Creed and Ryan Sieg, that's going to be a pairing. You're going to watch that entire race at Bristol.
Yeah, they're going to be racing each other without any doubt to make up those 13 points or to make it bigger, that difference. But, yeah, those are the two to watch out at Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend. But just to go to the reset, we mentioned the top five drivers. Noah Gregson would be at the top with his 5 wins and 38 playoff points. Ty Gibbs, by the way, and this tells you how important the playoff points are, he also has 5 wins but 35 playoff points. So that puts him just 3 points behind Gregson. Justin Allgaier has the 3 wins and 22 playoff points. Same thing between him and A.J. Allmendinger. A.J. Allmendinger has 3 wins, but he has only 17 playoff points. So that makes the difference between third and fourth. Josh Berry, 2 wins with 16 playoffs, just 1 point behind A.J. Allmendinger. Austin Hill with 2 wins and 11 playoff points. Going to 1 win, Brandon Jones takes the 7th spot with 6 playoff points and 1 win. Sam Mayer has no wins, 678 points and 2 playoff points. Riley Earps at 273 points, just 5 points difference. They both have 2 playoff points. Then it goes to Daniel Hemric at 615 points, Landon Castle at 597, and Ryan Sieg at 578. So, and you've already brought up how close it is between him and Sheldon Creed in that 13th spot below the cut line, with Ryan Sieg 13 points up and Sheldon Creed 13 points back. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. This is the final race of their regular season, and we'll know at the end of this race who are the 12 drivers that will go into the playoffs in the Xfinity Series.
Well, and the other thing we talk about, and we talked to Christian Rose about this, you know, his first time at the track. Bristol is a tough track. It can be a track of survival depending on how it goes. We could be talking about Brandon Brown, Anthony Alfredo, Moffitt's not eligible, Myatt Schneider, Jeb Burton, Jeremy Clements. Those drivers, if they were to get a win, could still jump up into this playoff and push both Ryan Sieg and Sheldon Creed out.
Yes. So especially if one of those drivers, if they get a win, if they're going to bounce somebody else out. So there's a lot to watch for. And Bristol is one of those tracks where anything and everything can happen, just like at a super speedway. So it's going to make it interesting.
And just to make sure we get them all there, Bailey Curry also has 25 starts. He's right now 21st in points. He would have to get into the top 20 in points and get the victory for him in order for his victory to count and move him on.
Yes, indeed. Okay, let's go ahead. Definitely a race to look forward to, just like the Truck Series race this weekend at Bristol. That race will be on Friday night at Bristol Motor Speedway, so definitely look forward to watching those. Okay, now Kansas Speedway was also the site of the 22nd annual Hollywood Casino 400 with race winner Bubba Wallace at the age of 28, racing the number 45 Root Insurance Toyota for team owner Michael Jordan, that's 2311 Racing, and his crew chief, Bootie Barker. Okay, it was his second victory in 176 Cup Series starts, his first victory in 8th top this year, and his first victory in 2nd top 10 finish in 10 races at Kansas Speedway. Team owner Denny Hamlin finished 2nd, posting his 12th top 10 finish in 29 races at Kansas, and it was his 9th top 10 finish this season. Christopher Bell, he finished 3rd, posting his 4th top 10 finish in 6 races at Kansas. And Austin Cindric, who finished 12th, was the highest finishing rookie of this race. Driving the same car number that carried teammate Kurt Busch to victory in the May race at Kansas, Bubba Wallace claimed a dramatic win at the same track this Sunday in the Hollywood Casino 400. It was the second event in the first round of the NASCAR Cup Series playoffs, and Wallace regained the lead on lap 225 after the final cycle of green flag pit stops at the 1.5-mile track. He stayed out front for the final 43 circuits as his car owner, Denny Hamlin, chased him down to no avail. He did come to within a second to close that gap. Bubba Wallace won again at Kansas Speedway, the first win of the year, the first at Kansas, and his second career win. Hamlin in second, Bell in third, then it was Alex Bowman, Martin Truex Jr., William Byron, Ross Chastain, Kyle Larson, Ryan Blaney, and Daniel Suarez to round out the top 10. Wallace took the lead from Bowman with 67 laps remaining. He retook the lead following the final green flag pit stop and held off a late charge by Hamlin and Bell to grab the win. His victory locks the number 45 team into the round of 12 for the Owners' Championship playoffs. Playoff drivers having problems on the day include Harvick. He got into the outside wall on lap 33 and broke the suspension on the car. He could not continue. He finished 36th. On lap 66, the pole winner, Tyler Reddick, blew a tire and hit the outside wall. The team could not repair the car, and he finished in 35th. Kyle Busch spun off turn 4 on lap 138 and spun through the grass. He lost a lap and got it back, but fell off the lead lap again later in the race. He ended up finishing 26th. Stage 1 was won by Christopher Bell. Stage 2 by Alex Bowman. There were 16 lead changes among 12 drivers, 9 cautions, and 43 yellow flag laps. So your thoughts about the race results here, Jay?
Well, and there are thoughts all the way throughout the field as things are shaking up here coming into this final cutoff round. I know a couple of them we got up on Hot Topics. Bubba Wallace getting the win. Right there alone, there is so many storylines within that. Kurt Busch out of the car with the still battling the concussion symptoms and not medically cleared. They swap over, put Bubba Wallace in that car to run for the Owners' Championship you mentioned. And this does move that team on to the Owners' Championship into the round of 12. So that's huge. Then you got team owner and yet driver for another team. And I put that one up for Hot Topics. Denny Hamlin right behind him. He's looking for his own championship as a driver, the playoff points and everything else. And we saw it. He was running them down in those final laps. Some great racing there at Kansas, especially in the final laps. Not sure what the changeover was. Toyota's come on strong there at the end. The other one that had a shot was a third Toyota of Christopher Bell. I mean, he was right up there mixing it up.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to win.
Martin Truex. You couldn't have picked between those three. That was a tough call. It looked there for a while, a strong run. What is it, 107 laps led? Alex Bowman was in it, faded a little bit there at the end. And then a good top five run for Martin Truex. And we've heard his statement. He didn't make the playoffs. He's going out to win races just to make a point. So, But then, unfortunately, we got to look down at the other end. You mentioned Kevin Harvick. This puts him in, an absolute must-win situation at Bristol. You had Tyler Reddick, who's been really hot and strong as of late. Kind of a hiccup there for the number 8 machine. The other thing I look at, second and this goes to the next-gen car and the desire of it. So far, I know Bubba Wallace running for the Owners' Championship in that race-winning car of 45, but the first two races of the playoffs have been won by non-playoff drivers. Eric Jones picking
amazing.
Up the win at Darlington, and Bubba Wallace here. Like I said, his is a little bit different scenario as he was in a car that was eligible, just not the driver. But still, two non-playoff drivers winning the first two races. That's unbelievable.
It is. And 18 different winners on the season.
That was the other factor. You're right. I forgot that we have picked up our 18th different winner on the season. So we were watching that throughout the year of how many winners, whether it would be a full field of 16 winners and nobody get in on points. We were really close to that. And we could still see that throughout the rest of the season if this trend continues.
Well, and the fact that we've seen so many different winners this year and so late into the season, we're still seeing it. It makes me wonder if we're going to see the same thing next year, the second year of the next gen car. It's going to be interesting.
Well, unfortunately, I don't want to get too far into a hot topic. I think that might be one of those cases where the veteran, the cream rises to the top. The veterans, we've seen it. Kevin Harvick's team figured it out this year.
They're getting better.
I think next year, we're going to see the cream rise to the top, so we may not see it as spread out as we have this year, but never know.
You never know. First two races of the playoffs have non-playoff drivers winning, and I fully expect that Martin Truex will be one of those drivers before it's all said and done. One, if not two or three.
He's certainly been in contention, and you look there, speaking of that, going back through 6th through 10th, William Byron, Ross Chastain, Kyle Larson, I kind of expected a little more out of him, still a solid day, but not a championship-winning performance. Chase Elliott, another one, finished just outside the top 10 and 11th, so kind of a mixture there. I think all the playoff drivers, with the exception of, Kyle Busch is in the middle, and Joey Logano. I don't care to discuss Joey Logano. That was my race pick. He faded more than faded there at the end. I didn't realize he had dropped that far back.
Well, let's put it this way. Of the top 14 drivers, there was only one non-playoff driver in that group. So 13 of the playoff drivers finished in that top 14.
And that was Martin Truex, you mentioned, and he only missed the playoffs by a couple of points. You mentioned it earlier with Carson Hocevar. Truex said the same thing. You know, in that final race, you can't put it on one or two positions on the track because you had 24, 25 races prior to that to pick up those 3 points. So he's well aware of that.
Yes, indeed. Okay, any other thoughts there?
No, this next race and then the reseeding, I know we'll preview the race on when we do the podcast on Wednesday. Another one, phenomenal spot for this at Bristol Motor Speedway. A short track like this, anything can happen. Shuffle this all up one more time. Like I mentioned, Harvick's in a must-win situation. We know he runs good there, and he runs close to Chase Elliott. That could be interesting for sure. There's some history there. Kyle Busch. I'm trying to remember how many wins does Kyle have at Bristol? I know it's up there.
Well, I don't know. It's a bunch of them, though. But Kevin Harvick actually went out on lap 33 with his accident. Tyler Reddick on lap 67 with his accident. Other drivers having accidents was Ty Gibbs. He left the race in lap 90. Corey LaJoie had an accident leaving at lap 114. And Harrison Burton had an accident taking him out of the race on lap 115. Several drivers out on accidents. These drivers were out on being a lap or two down. Brad Keselowski was out. Brad Keselowski went the full distance. Kyle Busch finished a lap down, as did Cody Ware. Then there was J.J. Yaley. No, it was 267 laps. There were a lot of drivers finishing a lap down. So Joey Logano, Noah Gregson, Justin Haley, Ty Dillon, Eric Almirola, Todd Gilliland, Landon Castle, and Brad Keselowski all finished a lap down. Two laps down, it was Kyle Busch and Cody Ware. Three laps would have been J.J. Yaley and Eric Jones. I was kind of surprised about that for Eric Jones. Two laps down, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and B.J. McLeod. And then we mentioned the accidents from Harrison Burton on down. So a lot of people did not finish on that lead lap. There were only, 16 cars on the lead lap at the end of this race.
Yeah, and that's where I know that last cycle of pit stops, which did play into Bubba Wallace's advantage, Denny Hamlin and Christopher Bell trying to run him down, but that's where Joey Logano, Noah Gregson, Justin Haley kind of got caught. And that's why I said I didn't realize he had fallen that far back, because he never was able to get his lap back. And thinking back and watching that now, I remember when he was trying to make sure he stayed on the lead lap or the first car for the free pass, but a caution never came out.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Let's go ahead and cover the points report here, Jay. This is the second race of the round, right?
Yep. So right now, at the top, and not that it makes a huge difference, but right now, Christopher Bell is your points leader after the reset from race, the start of the playoffs through these first two races, sitting at 2,108, got a 10-point lead over William Byron, 11 over Denny Hamlin as your top three, then 18 back to Joey Logano, 22 for Ryan Blaney, and that's your top five. Now, for Blaney, it's important because he got in on points, but with the finishes that certain drivers have had, shuffled that up. We haven't had a race winner lock in and move on, so right now I'm going to drop down to the four cut position, cutoff drivers that would be knocked out. So 12th spot, which is where the cut line would be, is Austin Cindric and Tyler Reddick. I didn't realize that. I didn't see that when they covered this the other day. Tyler Reddick and Austin Cindric in 11th and 12th at 2,052 points. Tied, Kyle Busch is 3 points. And I think this is different what they showed, because this is only showing 2 points to Kyle Busch. But it's really close, 2 or 3 points. Kyle Busch on the outside looking in. And then you have Austin Dillon is only another point behind. Chase Briscoe at 2043. Still within range, 9 points, but again, tough to make up when you're running all these playoff drivers in the top 10. Kevin Harvick, 2017, huge deficit, again, in a must-win situation. When we look over to the chart I'm looking at, talking about playoff points again, after this race, they'll reseed. Chase Elliott built up 40 playoff points through the regular season, including winning the regular season championship. Right now in seventh spot, he would go back to the top. Joey Logano has 25, it looks like would be second. Ross Chastain third with 20. And this is barring who wins at Bristol. It could change. But those three, Chastain, or Chase Elliott from seventh back up to first, Chastain from ninth back to third, and then Joey Logano from fourth to up to third, if they were to, as they sit right now. So that'll be interesting as to, again, these guys are going to be racing for stage points, the win to pick up an additional five. The locking in isn't as important for most of these top drivers. I won't say none of them, but most of them in pretty secure points position until you get down to. And I look at that. Throw Daniel Suarez, the other one in there. I mentioned the cut line at 52. Daniel Suarez is only at 2056, so he's only 4 points above that conglomeration of battles there. So those five drivers, Austin Dillon, Kyle Busch, Austin Cindric, Tyler Reddick, and Daniel Suarez, without a win, those five are going to be the ones that are watching that points battle and cut line.
Because Bristol is an elimination race. Now, we should mention also the top five cars that are racing for that ownership title. Joe Gibbs Racing's number 20 is at the top of the list at 2108 points. Then it's Henry Motorsports number 24 at 2098. Joe Gibbs Racing's number 11 at 2097. That's interesting. And then Team Penske's number 22 at 2090. And just 1 point behind Team Penske's number 22 is 23XI Racing's number 45 at 2089. So that's pretty close. Only 19 points between the first and fifth car in this owner title.
And I know we, Mike and I, Mike wasn't as familiar with that. We could possibly see the split championship. I don't think we've ever seen it at the cup level. There's only been a couple of times even in the playoffs that we've had this situation we have this year. And I know we're getting ready to roll into hot topics. Mike should be here shortly if he's not. So it is possible this year. Whether it happens or not, we'll have to see. The win by Bubba Wallace did lock him into this next round, so it could happen again.
It certainly could. All things for us to watch for and at Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend. Remember, it all starts Thursday night with the ARCA Menards Series and the Truck Series. Friday night is the Xfinity Series, and Saturday night is the Cup Series race. So a lot on the line this weekend at Bristol. It is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off, and joining us for the conversation here tonight is Michael Orzel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Okay. Mike, we're all good to go for Wednesday for the 4 o'clock time frame. Or I shouldn't have said that. I didn't want to say the time, but we're all good to go, as indicated earlier.
Okay, sure. If anything changes, I should be available all day on Wednesday. So if anything changes, just give me a call shoot me a message, and I'll figure it out.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, Mike, why don't you bring up our first hot topic here for tonight?
Well, do we want to continue beating the horse? I think we do, because there's a big announcement coming tomorrow to – it sounds like confirm a lot of things that we've been talking about a while regarding Kyle Busch, his future plans. But the big question is, what's going to happen with KBM? And they have an announcement as well for tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern time. So expect news from KBM.
Now, wait a minute. KBM has a conference? Because Kyle Busch is the only one that I know of that scheduled a conference.
I'll have to double-check the tweet, but I believe I saw KBM also said they have an announcement. I'm not sure if it's aligned with the Kyle Busch announcement and it's all going to be one press conference, or if KBM is going to be doing a separate thing. But
yeah,
while you guys are talking about it, I'll find the tweet.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking at the info that I got in email. It came from Kyle Busch Motors, but it's got Kyle Busch's signature on here. It says, who, the two-time Cup Series champion, Kyle Busch. I know it came from Kyle Busch Motorsports. I don't know if it's a Kyle Busch Motorsports announcement or is included with this or not, but it's possible since it did come from Kyle Busch Motorsports. So no need to look it up.
All right, fair enough. So I guess we can chew on that one for a couple rounds. How's that?
Okay, yeah. Kyle Busch having a press conference for tomorrow. What are your thoughts? Jay?
Well, and that's what it does tie into. We've been hearing, seeing more and more smoke and getting to be a little bit of fire with this RCR deal over the past week. All of a sudden, a lot of people were saying no comment, mentioned it seemed like Kyle Busch, the comfortability level during his interviews felt a lot more comfortable, that something was fairly secure. It just wasn't ready to be announced. So with that, as Mike pointed out, though, I think there are some things, and they may not all be divulged tomorrow, but I heard him even during the truck race this past weekend talking about it. It could have huge implications on the truck series with KBM Motorsports. They've been a championship-winning team as far as the owner championship with Kyle Busch driving some of the races, and then the regular full-time drivers of John Hunter Nemechek and Corey Heim, I think, were supposed to go full-time next year. So it's going to be interesting what comes along with that. Is it even possible for him to drive for Chevrolet at the Cup level and keep Toyota in the trucks? I don't know. I know they don't particularly favor that, but I don't know that Chevy is willing to invest in the truck series like Toyota has. So I know that was one of the things that weighed heavily on Kyle as he was making his decision. I'm still a little shocked, I guess, by the decision. I'm one that from the beginning said he was still going to sign with Joe Gibbs Racing one way or another. Next possibility was moving to another Toyota team. I know right now it's only 2311, and there was some discussion amongst that. We brought up and talked about possibly ownership when it came to partnering with College Racing. So we'll have to see what the final details of this decision are, but it does seem to be a lock. And then that opens the door of where does Tyler Reddick go? Does he drive the number three of Earnhardt, which I highly doubt, but I highly doubted he'd be with RCR. So what do I know?
Yeah, this whole thing is kind of interesting. Another point that's interesting here is that he really doesn't have sponsorship completely lined up, which was part of the issue at Joe Gibbs Racing. According to Adam Stern, RCR sponsors have indicated that they're open to working with Kyle Busch, and the team is also out seeking new brands. A couple of RCR partners encouraged the team to sign him, while others are taking a wait-and-see approach. So it sounds like he's still vacant some sponsorship for next season, which I find very interesting. Could be the reason that they've waited so long to make the announcement, but it sounds like they're working on it. Again, this is not officially announced yet. The press conference is set for tomorrow morning, so I'm sure we'll have more to say on this on Wednesday during the podcast. But from everything that I've seen, it sounds like Austin Dillon is going to be in that number three. Kyle Busch would be in the number eight, which, as you said, leads everyone to ask the question, if Kyle Busch is going to be in the number eight, where's Tyler Reddick going to be racing? So that's very interesting. And like Jay and I have been saying, when one domino falls, there's a bunch of other dominoes that usually fall afterward. So I'm sure that will be part of the news. I don't think I've seen a press conference for RCR set up yet, but it's just so hard to know where all of these dominoes are going to end up falling. I suspect a third car for Richard Childress Racing with either the 30, well, we've already got a 31. I'm not sure what the number would be, but I suspect there's going to be at RCR with all of this news. But I just think the oddest thing about all of this is they don't have complete sponsorship yet, according to the sources that we've seen swirling around everything that's been said about this. And keep in mind, nothing is official yet until tomorrow morning. So, Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I would say the Kyle Busch to RCR thing is pretty much an official done deal. When you've got guys like Bob Pockrass and Jordan Bianchi reporting it, that's not quite an official announcement. It's not an official press conference, but they're not the kind of guys to traffic in unsubstantiated rumors. And, oh, by the way, RCR has updated their Twitter profile as of very recently, and kind of their catchphrase handle or whatever is home of 16-time NASCAR champions. And, well, Richard Childress Racing only has 14 on the books right now. We know Kyle Busch is sitting on two trophies, so I'm not great at doing math, but it's fortunate I'm not wearing shoes right now. So if I add 2 to 14, well, that sounds like Kyle Busch is bringing his two championships to Richard Childress Racing. So I would say a done deal for Kyle Busch to RCR. The bigger questions, like we said, what happens to Tyler Reddick? I really see probably 3, maybe 4 outcomes for that. They could stand up a third Richard Childress Racing Cup team for him, and he could run that whatever that third Cup team is. I don't know if the resources are there to make that happen, though. It's not like Richard Childress Racing is sitting on a stack of cash and can just afford to put another team out there. Oh, by the way, they wouldn't have a charter. Charter would be another $20 million investment that I doubt RCR be willing to make, because that would almost commit them to being a three-car team for however long they want to be, which is probably a road they don't want to go down. The next option would be, and this is all dependent on what Tyler Reddick's contract actually says, which I don't know. Obviously, none of us are privy to the things that are actually in Reddick's contract. that could obligate one party to do something or another. So that's, you know, caveat everything with that. The other option, Richard Childress Racing has an Xfinity Series program. They could bump Tyler Reddick back down to the Xfinity Series for a year and have him drive one of their two cars in the Xfinity Series. That way they're still getting their use out of Tyler Reddick on the contract. They keep him out of Toyota's hands for an additional year, and they're still meeting their contractual obligations to Tyler Reddick. I don't know if his contract means he has to be in a Cup ride or not. The other thing Richard Childress could do, if the contract allows it, is basically pay him to stay home. Put Tyler Reddick on the couch for a year. That would be probably the worst thing that they could do to Tyler Reddick, but Richard Childress Racing has Tyler Reddick under contract for 2023. Maybe the contract says they have to put him in a Cup car. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe they put him in a simulator. Maybe they put him on the as a backup driver. Still under contract, still employed by Richard Childress Racing. Again, it all depends on what the contract says for him. The other option would be they do release Tyler Reddick and he goes over to Toyota. And then the big question there becomes, well, what happened to Kurt Busch? If Kurt Busch is healthy and ready to drive again, Denny Hamlin has said no ifs, ands, or buts. Kurt Busch is back in the number 45 for next year. And that's not, apparently that's not open for discussion or debate. Denny has very clearly said that that 45 is Kurt Busch's car for as long as he's able to drive it. But if Kurt is still hurt, the big question is, does Tyler Reddick go into the 45? Everyone's kind of penciling Ty Gibbs into the 18 car, but that could be another potential landing spot for Tyler Reddick, especially if Kurt Busch is healthy and is able to run the 45 next year. Gerald Gibbs had said previously that he'd like to keep Ty Gibbs in the Xfinity Series for another year. That was before Kurt got hurt and Ty got a bunch of Cup starts, so who knows where that plan is right now. But maybe they do keep Ty Gibbs in the Xfinity Series for that extra year. Tyler Reddick goes and races the 18 for Joe Gibbs Racing for a year and then moves over to his contract with 2311 as scheduled in 2024. A lot to pay attention to, and we can talk about KBM probably on the next one through because I've already been talking for like 5 minutes here.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up.
Well, during our race review, I was talking about Sammy Smith and Ty Gibbs. Mike brings up an interesting scenario there. If, as you mentioned, it's all in contracts, and we'll have to see how all the announcement goes, what information we do get, because I don't think we're going to get all questions answered tomorrow. I really don't. When it comes to KBM and the truck series, maybe not even the car numbers and everything for Richard Childress for next year, but just the basic, it will be Kyle Busch over at RCR if that is the official announcement. But the possibility of Tyler Reddick filling in the 18 for a one-year deal so they can keep Ty Gibbs in the Xfinity Series as they originally wanted, definitely an interesting thought process. And I don't know when the Kyle Busch deal came together for RCR. Initially, even after Tyler Reddick had announced his decision to go to Toyota and Team 2311 after the 2023 season, although Childress was upset, he did say that he had a contract and Tyler Reddick would drive for them. He didn't say where. So like Mike said, could be in the Cup Series. Maybe it is in the Xfinity Series, depending on that contract. The other thing would be as if they may not have the resource for a full third team, but they have a lot of alliances and partners that maybe it is a third team supported by Richard Childress. And right now I'm trying to think, I know there isn't really room at Petty GMS, but that's one of the ones RCR has an alliance with. The other, I believe, is Colleague Racing. And we haven't heard anything from them on full-time driver for next year. So there again, that's a possibility. And then it just becomes a Richard Childress-supported car. Again, Mike said it. It all depends on what's in that contract and who wants to push what buttons. You know, if they say our job is to just pay him, you're right. He could be sitting at home. I don't know who's going to hold what kind of grudge. That's come up a couple times of if there's still something between Richard Childress and Kyle Busch and the hold my watch deal. Who is it? Somebody this morning on Sirius XM that would be the way to bring him in during the press conferences, to have Kyle Busch come in with the watch to give to Childress and be like, here, this is one you had to drop when you went to punching me.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation that's developed here with Tyler Reddick. According to the chart at J-Ski's for the 2023 season, it does say that Childress has exercised the option on Reddick, and he will return in 2023. The question is just where. And you guys bring up a good point about the charter as it relates to a third team. They're so expensive right now, it's hard to say. But you never know what could happen here. I would say the other option is, as you mentioned, maybe an alliance where they have ECR engines already being used. And having Tyler Reddick race with one of the affiliates, but again, you're going to run into, somebody's either got to move out of those spots, or they've got to pick up a charter in order to make room for Tyler Reddick. Tyler Reddick is too good of a driver, I think, to sit on the couch for an entire year, unless you want to be vindictive. I don't think Richard Childress is that kind of person. I don't think he would sit him on the couch. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I just don't see that happening. So I do expect him to be somewhere next year. The question is where. In order for him to be at 2311, it would have to be a situation where Richard Childress gives up that option to keep him for the 2023 season. So even though it's listed here that he's not giving it up, that could all change with an announcement tomorrow. So for a lot of this, we're going to have to wait until the announcement happens and for the other dominoes to fall. But as far as I know, the press conference for tomorrow is just with Kyle Busch and Kyle Busch Motorsports. So we'll see what happens. What's interesting, though, is everybody's talking about where Kyle Busch is going to be. They're not mentioning what's going to happen with Kyle Busch Motors, whether he's going to stay under the Toyota umbrella or if he's going to come under the Chevrolet umbrella. That's all going to be picked up. The other question that was brought up, I think, early in some of these conversations is that Kyle Busch had an interest in being a co-owner. That's why I thought that RCR would be out of the question, because I see RCR transitioning over to the Dillon family rather than to Kyle Busch Motorsports. But maybe they've come to some sort of an agreement where it could be RCR and then Dillon and Kyle Busch. Or maybe Kyle Busch is going to retire before that happens, at the same time that Richard Childress retires or whatever. A lot of scenarios can happen here, but I just think it's interesting that nobody said anything about Kyle Busch Motorsports. So, and I know, Mike, you want to say some things about that as well. But I just think it's going to be interesting to see what we hear tomorrow and what other announcements are forthcoming afterwards. Mike, your follow-up?
You're absolutely right. The KBM piece is probably the most complicated bit of the whole deal. Kyle Busch moving is probably the biggest move, a driver move, since Dale Earnhardt Jr. left DEI to go to Hendrick Motorsports in the mid-2000s. This is probably going to be the biggest move since then. Tyler Reddick leaving Richard Childress Racing to potentially go to Toyota. Not a huge, huge move. It's not unprecedented, but it's not small either. Tyler Reddick's a pretty good driver. Then again, Kyle Busch and Tyler Reddick, they're just race car drivers. They're just single individual people. KBM is an entire organization of 50-something employees. And, oh, by the way, they are more or less Toyota's development pipeline that starts in the truck series. So now you're talking about an entire manufacturer's development pipeline when you're talking about what's going to happen from here. And I think that's probably been the biggest point of contention in these negotiations with Kyle Busch is, what happens with KBM. Kyle has said repeatedly through this process that he's more worried about KBM and the future of that organization than he is himself in his own career as a race car driver. So I'm sure that was a major part of this negotiation, and I'm really looking forward to figuring out how that's going to sort out. You kind of touched on it where we all assumed that whatever manufacturer Kyle Busch ended up driving for, whether he stayed with Toyota, went to Chevrolet, ended up at Stuart Haas and a Ford, that KBM would follow and would become the manufacturer for whatever manufacturer Kyle Busch was driving for. And there's a lot of historical precedent for that. Most of the time, manufacturers tend to kind of wall off their drivers. You can drive for a different team if you need to. For example, a lot of the drivers driving the number 48 in the Xfinity series is a Chevrolet. Well, they're all Chevrolet drivers. Ross Chastain, some of the Hendrick Motorsports drivers, Austin Dillon, they've all been in that 48 so far this year, the Xfinity series, but they've all been Chevrolet drivers. Same thing for the 07 in the Xfinity series, all Ford drivers. So manufacturers tend to be very possessive about, quote unquote, their race car drivers. And we assumed that that was going to extend to the future of KBM as well, where if Kyle Busch was driving a Chevrolet, for example, KBM would become a Chevrolet team. Well, David Wilson over at TRD has been very vocal about wanting to keep Kyle Busch, but knowing that maybe they're going to lose him, maybe that was Toyota's last little thing where they were able to preserve their relationship with KBM and they keep their pipeline. And there's a handshake between Toyota and Chevrolet where Kyle Busch can drive a Chevrolet in the Cup Series and own and potentially drive for a Toyota Truck Series team. I don't know. That's probably the biggest thing that I'm interested in seeing tomorrow, and it's the biggest thing that we don't know and affects the most number of people.
Yeah, with all of the leaks that have come out about him going to RCR, there's nothing being said about KBM and any of that. So that's really amazing. Okay, Jay, we can go ahead and start another topic. I'll probably have to interrupt at some point, but, well, let's go ahead and start the next topic.
All right. Well, I want to look at this kind of came up, and I didn't see a whole lot to it, but I know there's always those people out there that want to get these kind of things spun up. The Denny Hamlin owning a team that he doesn't drive for, and thus yesterday – it's today, Monday. Yeah, yesterday, make sure I was on the right day, we saw him trying to run down a driver he owns. If there was any, sandbagging, or because he makes more money as far as that team advancing in the playoffs and the owner's standing versus his own championship aspirations in driving for Joe Gibbs Racing. Is there a problem there, and does NASCAR need to change it or do something about it? And I think sportscasting.com is where I pulled up the article from.
Oh, you put that up. Okay, good. Mike, I'm curious to know your thoughts about this.
Well, it's really hard to look at the situation and not think that there isn't at least some kind of a conflict of interest. And Jay kind of laid it out there. Yes, Denny Hamlin drives for Joe Gibbs Racing. He drives the number 11 car for Joe Gibbs Racing. His job, his day-to-day 9-to-5 job, is to finish the number 11 car as far ahead in the standings as he possibly can. However, Denny Hamlin has a side hustle, and his side hustle job is to prepare the 23 and the 45 car to do as well as they possibly can and have those two cars that he owns finish as well as they possibly can. And it's really hard to reconcile those two differences there. At Daytona, we saw Denny say, coming up at the end of stage two, that he would, quote, give Martin the position. He said that over the radio. And this was in regard to giving Martin Truex an additional position on the track for stage points, knowing that Truex was in a points-critical position to advance and get that last playoff points spot. So that's a recent example where Denny Hamlin is not necessarily always inclined to make sure that the number 11 car that he's driving finishes ahead of every single other competitor every single time in any circumstance. He's got a grasp of the bigger picture, and he's willing to play those big picture games. What he said after the race yesterday, he said that, oh, I was trying as hard as I could to catch him. I hit the fence, et cetera, et cetera. If you think I'm going to let you beat me because you're driving my car, you need to get another job. I'm kind of paraphrasing. That's basically what Denny Hamlin said. And if you take it at face value, sure. It looked like he was driving pretty hard yesterday, and the 45 car was extremely fast at the end of the race. I don't know that anyone could have caught him. But at the same time, it's not like Denny Hamlin lost ground to Christopher Bell by putting it in the fence either. I don't know that there was any way that he could have caught the 45 of those 10 laps or so he was trying to chase him down. But at the same time, it's hard to look at it and say, yeah, he was giving it his best effort to do so. I wasn't in the car, and I certainly wasn't in Denny Hamlin's head, but it does look like there may be a potential conflict of interest there, especially if he's in a position where, you know, the next round, the 45 is about to be eliminated from the owner's championship playoffs. Well, now does Denny Hamlin yield a position to the 45 to try and advance into the playoffs for that potential owner's championship? I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think it was just a matter of time before it came up. There is a precedent. Tony Stewart was kind of in the same situation where he was driving, I think, for his own race team, wasn't it? Before, while also being the team owner. So there was a chance for him to be helping people in his race team as well. But yeah, this is a big question, and it makes me wonder how long NASCAR's going to. I'm sure NASCAR's keeping an eye on it. I don't think Denny Hamlin made up a second or more in order to close the gap between him and Bubba Wallace. But there might have been other incidents throughout the race that we've kind of all overlooked, where maybe he gave him a little bit of an edge. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at the entire race. But yeah, it leaves itself open to this kind of criticism without any doubt, and this kind of thought process. And especially with Bubba Wallace winning yesterday, I had a feeling that this was something that was going to come up sooner or later, and it came up a lot sooner than I thought. But yeah, it's I'm going to kind of wait before I say anything else. But Jay, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
Well, did you want to go ahead and do your announcement now before I start?
Yeah, let me go ahead and do my announcement now. We do an announcement at this time of the night for our first-time listeners because we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. So with that, you're going to hear us continuing to talk and probably going off the air mid-sentence. Just know that we are continuing to record the rest of our conversation, and that's part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. So what happens is when we finish our conversation here, I'll go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know when the podcast is available, and at that point you can go to the two-hour mark on our player at fanforracing.com, and then you'll hear the rest of the conversation that took place here tonight as part of our Hot Topics conversation. So, again, I didn't want anybody to be caught off guard, not knowing what is happening or where they can hear the rest of that conversation. So that's why we do this announcement at this time of the night. And with that, Jay, let's hear your thoughts.
When I look back, I think there might be a little bit of inconsistency here from NASCAR's part. And I know there were some rule changes as far as the number of cars you could own. But I look back to Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, DEI. Dale Earnhardt, obviously the owner of that, driving for Richard Childress.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
that's
when
true.
It came to, unfortunately, his last race, there was question whether or not Dale Earnhardt was blocking in order to allow two DEI cars, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Michael Waltrip, race out the win. I don't know. That's one of those, as Mike said, you're not in the car. You can argue it either way. A few years back, Michael Waltrip had retired from driving but was involved in the ownership side. When he did a one-off race, there was some things he had to do in order to drive for another team. But now Denny Hamlin's back in the same position, and I'm not sure how that all works. So I think there may be some inconsistencies or something NASCAR does need to address. Now, do I think Denny Hamlin let the 45 team win? No, I don't, nor do I think Dale Earnhardt did. These guys are drivers. When you're talking about mid-race, getting stage points or something to that effect, that's a little different. That happens among teammates all the time. We used to see it back with the whole free pass when you could race back to the flag. You'd let a teammate go. If you got bonus points for leading laps, they'd let a teammate lead a lap for one or two laps, then take the lead back just so they got those bonus points. That is not just giving them a win to that effect when it comes down to the end. We've seen it. There's certainly drivers, Joey Logano, Brad Keselowski, wrecked at Daytona, Austin Cindric, Ryan Blaney. There was some into contact there. I don't think there's very many drivers that would just outright let another team, whether it be teammate, owner team, win the race. Now, we've seen it at Daytona. You have to have a drafting partner. If your best option is to push somebody, it's going to bring you to second and the team win. Absolutely. But if you have that shot, and I just watched, Mike, I watched the Race of Champions, or Race to the Championship, what's the name of the show on USA. Watch that after this race Sunday. Ryan Blaney talked about it. Yeah, he was going to stick with his teammate until the very end to make sure a Penske team won, but when he had his time to make his shot, he was going to take it. So, I really don't see anything. I didn't even see him slow down that much where he said he got in the wall and then couldn't catch him no more. The last I saw, recall, he was still gaining on him. He just needed another lap. I mean, it was another lap in that race would have been quite interesting for sure. But I believe Denny Hamlin. I'm not a big Denny Hamlin fan per se, but I think he was sincere. You drive for me, just like Kyle Busch in the trucks. You're going to drive one of my trucks, and when I'm out there on the track, if you're going to win the race, you've got to beat me. I'm not going to give it to you. You've got to beat me. And I think Denny Hamlin is true in his statement with that.
Mike?
So this was really a two-part question, wasn't it? The first part of the question was, is there a potential conflict of interest? And I think we're all in the agreement that if it's not an actual conflict of interest, there's certainly the perception of a potential conflict of interest. So the next question, or the next part of this question, is what should NASCAR do about it? And that's probably the harder nut to crack, because on one hand, NASCAR has got to consider the integrity of their sport. They don't want a owner doing underhanded things to try and manipulate the outcome of a race or anything like that. But on the other hand, Denny Hamlin kind of represents the new breed of team ownership. Your guys like Rick Hendrick, Richard Childress, Joe Gibbs, I kind of put them into the old breed of team owners, established organizations that have been around the sport forever, that have been very successful in the sport, but are very set in their way of doing things. And in a lot of ways, they approach NASCAR Cup Series racing in the exact same way that they did 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Those teams have not changed substantially, at least in terms of how they approach racing, versus the new type of owners, Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan at 2311, Justin Marks and Pitbull at Trackhouse are probably two of the premier organizations that I would categorize in this new breed of owners, where they are very engaged. They are willing to take chances. They're very vocal about things that they want to see change in the sport for good, maybe for the worse, but they're very vocal in taking an active role in the sport. And NASCAR desperately needs owners like that to carry the sport into the future. Rick Hendrick, Joe Gibbs, Richard Childress, et cetera, they've been phenomenal for the sport. The sport would not be what it is today without the inputs from those team owners. However, their time in the sport is very limited from here on out. All those guys are in their 70s or their 80s. Time marches on. They don't have a lot of time left, and NASCAR needs that new breed of energetic, engaged owners to carry the sport deeper into the 21st century. So going and heavy-handedly addressing Denny Hamlin and how he conducts himself on the racetrack, referenced his teams that he owns, it's really double-edged, because you got to protect the integrity of the sport, but at the same time, you have to protect the future of the sport in these new team owners. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm not sure that I know the answer. I don't think NASCAR is going to do anything about it, because you've got Brad Keselowski, who's a team owner. We just talked about Kyle Busch wanting to be. Kyle Busch is another team owner that goes out there and races with his team. And remember, there are all kinds of questions about him helping John Hunter Nemechek. So NASCAR knows that there's a perception like that out there. I'll give you another reason why Denny Hamlin possibly didn't try to help Bubba Wallace is the owner's championship. The number 11 car is third in that owner's points at 297 points, just 1 point behind Hendrick Motorsports, number 24. And 2311's number 45 is fifth in those owner points at 289. So he's, 8 points back from that number 11. But Joe Gibbs Racing wouldn't have been happy if Denny Hamlin, I mean, right now he's 1 point behind Hendrick Motorsports. That one position could have made the difference between second and third place for Joe Gibbs Racing. So I don't know. Denny Hamlin's finished two races now in second place in the playoffs. It's going to be an interesting scenario to watch. But, yeah, I don't know what NASCAR can do about it, to be perfectly honest with you. They probably could do something about it, but it would kind of stall the growth of the sport. And I don't think they want to do that. So it is going to be interesting to watch, though, because we've already had a couple of situations here with Kyle Busch Motorsports where we thought Kyle Busch was helping one of his team members. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
I kind of disagree with you guys. For one, like I said, I don't think there is an issue that there was anything blatant. But on the other hand, NASCAR is bigger than one team or organization. And I think back, there's several cases where they have shown that. Not to say there wasn't some other things that played a role in it, but the penalty, first go back to Michael Waltrip Racing when Toyota first came in. First race they participated in that they got caught with supposedly jet fuel in the engine. NASCAR put them 100 points in the hole, which at that was the standard at that time, the biggest penalty as far as points when you're running for a season-long championship. That was for Toyota first coming in and Michael Waltrip Racing as the first Toyota team. Then we had the shenanigans for the playoffs when there was some collusion amongst that. NASCAR put out a penalty, and in my opinion was at least the final nail in the coffin that brought down Michael Waltrip Racing. They were willing to do that because it was the integrity of the sport that has to be upheld first. So I think they need to address this. Being we haven't seen anything definitive, I think they do need to at least address it and say, hey, we're not going to allow this to happen. And I think back to last year was the first year of year before. There were some conspiracy people that, again, I think fans just try and stir stuff up, or media, whichever it may be. But there were some questions at Daytona whether or not Denny Hamlin went below the line and made an illegal pass. And there were people saying, oh, NASCAR's letting him by with it because he's coming in with Michael Jordan and then a second charter, that their plans for expansion. Denny Hamlin's already tried that card once. Said, hey, if we don't get changes, we're not going to expand to a third team. We're not going to grow any more than we are already. NASCAR's not going to buy into that. You talk about these teams, Roger Penske, Richard Childress, Joe Gibbs Racing, Hendrick Motorsports. The head owner may be going away. We've already seen it. Rick Hendrick has got Jeff Gordon in line. Talk about Richard Childress Racing. It's kind of an assumption. Sharon mentioned it. The Dillon boys, Mike Dillon, locked in a very high position there, probably going to be the one to take over there. Joe Gibbs Racing has a couple of people in their organization. Okay, so the team's not going to go away. The head owner may, but the team isn't going to. So NASCAR doesn't have to try and cater to somebody else as a new team or anybody else. And they shouldn't. They really shouldn't. I am so against that. I don't care if it's the fan favorite, most popular driver. You don't cater to anyone. And I don't want to sound cruel here, but think about it. We've lost Dale Earnhardt. The sport continued. Drivers like Tony Stewart, Jeff Gordon have retired. Sport still exists. You don't cater to one individual. That is not what makes the sport.
Okay. That'll be the last word there. There was something else I was going to mention, and I totally forgot what it was. But Mike, what's our next hot topic?
Well, I'm not going to say the honeymoon is over yet, but I think a little bit of reality is starting to sink in regarding North Wilkesboro and the All-Star race for next year, specifically regarding traffic management. The North Carolina Department of Transportation has said there's not enough time to build any new interchanges off of US 421 to support any events at North Wilkesboro for this coming May. It might be on the table for the future, but it sounds like traffic management at North Wilkesboro is going to be an issue.
Yeah. Jay, your thoughts?
Well, we've seen this at other tracks in the first year or two. I think Michigan is one that struggled with it, and I don't remember if it was Kansas or Kentucky. Bristol is one, and that was kind of where my thought went. I know they have campers that either do it for a little bit of extra money or shuttles, golf carts or whatever that they'll run. You may end up doing something like that for this first year. And they knew that going in. I mean, that was, as Mike put up in our comments, and I'll let him talk more about it, but they knew that going in, that was going to be one of the things they would have to address, because it's just not capable of sustaining what we have now for a fan base and what they're going to bring in, even just for this first All-Star. I know there were some issues talked about for the late model race that they held with this revitalization program. So, yeah, maybe they got more than they expected or whatever. But they knew that going into it. I think they will come with a plan. Is it going to be the best? No, probably not. But it'll manage at least to then set themselves up, like you're saying, of what the future plans are to increase it so that it gets better. You may have to suffer through it for this first year, I guess. That's one of the concerns, the entire infrastructure of the facility. I know you talked about having the portable lighting, portable bathrooms, and all of that. They got a lot of work to do, but give SMI credit. I mean, they've done this before. There's a lot of things that people said couldn't be done, putting dirt on Bristol, racing in a Coliseum, whatever it be. Don't put that challenge in front of a team like SMI, because they'll make it happen.
Well, that's true. And one of the thoughts that I had is, we talked about it earlier, the seating at North Wilkesboro right now is only 18 to 20,000. And that's still a lot of people for traffic. And like Mike mentioned, there were traffic problems even with the late model racing that took place. So it makes me wonder if they don't make this All-Star race kind of a premium race for you to be at. Only the 18 to 20,000 people are going to be allowed to race there. I don't know. Did they talk about expanding the seat at North Wilkesboro? I'm not sure. But I do think, especially for this first year, and if they do it for a second year, they're going to have to limit the number of people that can come there, especially if they don't have the infrastructure to handle that many people. But you brought up another point, Mike, and that is the hotels in the area. Similar to Bristol, Bristol has this same issue. You have to stay 20 miles away from Bristol Motor Speedway if you're going to go to that track and don't have a camper. So I don't know if they expand the camping. Maybe that's another option, so that people can bring in their campers and stay there instead of staying at a hotel 20 miles away. But I will say Bristol's a lot bigger than what North Wilkesboro is, and they found a way to make that work. So for the 18,000 to 20,000 seats that they currently have, they're going to have to find a way to make this work, and I do think that NASCAR will find a way. Is it going to be kind of a pain for everybody? Because I've heard for many years that Bristol Motor Speedway has had that same problem where they don't have easy traffic in or out of that speedway, and yet people still want to go to Bristol Motor Speedway. So it's the marketing that's going to have to be in play here, because according to the tweet that was put out here about this, it's going to take years for them to make any traffic reconfigurations to make that a little bit easier. My thing is, I think they're going to have to limit the number of people that can be at that all-star race. And my other thing was that they had talked about the possibility of a three-day event, a weekend event, with other racing that was there in association with the all-star race. So that's going to be interesting to see when the schedule comes out. And there's word saying that that schedule could come out as early as this week. So a lot of big news this week coming out. Mike, what are your thoughts?
You kind of hit on it a little bit. My dad and I are planning on going to this race. And this is assuming we can get tickets. Obviously, they haven't released tickets for sale yet, and it's probably going to be a fast, quick contest for who can get in there, log in, and buy their tickets as quickly as they possibly can. But we have been looking into hotel rooms and stuff. And the nearest hotel we could find that didn't look like the roaches were going to carry you away in the middle of the night is a 37-minute drive from the racetrack. And that's not taking into account any potential traffic jams because of inadequate roads. So 37-minute drive one way to get to the racetrack for a hotel that looks like it's reasonably clean. This is kind of the reason North Wilkesboro went away in the first place. Yes, it's a short track. Yes, it's historical. But North Wilkesboro is not in the middle of nowhere. North Wilkesboro is the capital of nowhere. There is nothing there, and that's the problem. It makes Darlington look like a beacon of civilization, and Darlington's in the middle of a swamp. North Wilkesboro is in the middle of nowhere, and the problem there is if we want to start talking about making new highway interchanges and all that stuff, it's really hard to make a case for that to support one or two NASCAR races a year into a town that has no other real draw. So is NASCAR going to be able to bring in the kind of revenue and volume of tourism into this area to justify 10, 15, 20, however million dollars it's going to take to upgrade the highway structure into the capital of nowhere in Wilkes County, North Carolina? I don't know, but this is kind of, like I said, it's running up against why North Wilkesboro went away in the first place. I'm really glad it's back, and I really hope they can solve some of these problems, but fans are getting a bit of a reminder of why this place went away, and it wasn't because the racing was bad. It was because the economy and the market of NASCAR kind of moved away from it, and this is a place that's still very much stuck, not in the mid-90s when they shut down, but stuck maybe in the early 80s when they were still at their heyday.
Jay?
We'll have to see how they make it work. Like I said, I have faith that they will one way or another, whether it's a temporary road, like I said, some type of transportation system. When it comes to the hotel thing, and this brought back a memory, and I was just getting permission, if you will, to discuss this, but I was not aware of that there is a Bristol, Virginia, on the other side of the state line there. So Amanda booked for Bristol, and when she was giving me directions to the hotel, I was like, hey, we just went by the track. You know, where are we going? So it can be done. You talk about Eldora. We talked some about that earlier in the night. That track is 10 miles out in the cornfield. They make it work. People are willing to, if it takes staying 30 minutes, an hour away. Typically, when my family goes, we try to. That way you're not all jammed into one area. We stay 30 minutes to an hour outside of town, wherever it be. St. Louis doesn't matter. But that's our preference. Now, whether or not, you know, that deters some fans, I would hope not. I really don't. And like I said, I can see where they may make even just a temporary road. You know, we see that when they do road construction or something. They can build a temporary road quick enough so that then it at least eases the flow, and the plan is to make it permanent in the years to come if that's the direction they go. Now, Mike's got some other issues there than the other amenities that are there so that you don't, say, have to eat at the track or whatever. That one's a little bit bigger to solve. Again, you got a cooler and put some sandwich meat in it or whatever. You want to go? Make it happen. I mean, that's a choice you got to make.
They don't let you take that into the track a lot of times, Jay.
No, but you can have it, you know, have your picnic out in the tailgate, if you will, however you want to use the word tailgate. For us, it was food, not drinks, but a handful of snacks or whatever, whether you stuff them in your sneakers or whatever to get them in, so be it.
Yeah, because I've had food taken away from me going into the track before, too. But you bring up some interesting scenarios there. The tailgates, a lot of people tailgate all day long. I know, and that's true what you're saying about the hotels, too. When I was going to, and I think you were doing this, too, Jay, when we were going to Chicagoland Speedway, we weren't staying right there in Joliet. The hotels, for one thing, weren't available. We had to stay in more of the outlying area. That's a good 20, not 20, but maybe 30 or 40 minutes from the track. So I don't think that's unusual for racetracks. But to Mike's point, it's the access to the track that's going to be the issue. And NASCAR needs to really take a look at what the solutions for that could be. And it is going to be interesting to see how they do deal with that. And it's not just the hotel, it's the food as well. You can't run across the street and go to the McDonald's across the street like you can at some of the tracks. That's just not going to happen. So it's the planning ahead and knowing that before you come to the track and how you deal with that. So it's going to be interesting. It's kind of interesting that they kind of made this plan probably knowing that you can't make these road changes that quickly. It takes years, according to the sources we have here, in order to make that happen because there are all the approvals that have to be put into place as well as the funding that has to be put into place in order to make those things happen. So to me, it's just going to be interesting to see how they deal with that at North Wilkesboro. Mike brings up a good point. It is one of the reasons why they had to end up closing North Wilkesboro because fans didn't like the hassle that they had to go through in order to get to the track. But I think the best way for NASCAR to handle that is to make this a lottery kind of thing where it's a premium to be able to get to go to that track. And, yes, you're going to have to deal with some things, but they certainly don't want to open it up to twice what that handle because that's just going to make it more of a nightmare. So I think they're going to have to limit the number of people that can be there. Or open up the camping so that fans can get in there early and then, be there for the entire weekend. So we'll see how they deal with it. Mike, you get the final word.
I don't care. I'll sleep in my car. I'll catch pigeons from under the grandstand. I'm going to North Wilkesboro. But, Sharon, you bring up some really good points. It's not so much about the location of the track. It's the access to it. A good counterpoint to this is Talladega. So Talladega is kind of in the middle of nowhere in a little nothing town, kind of dead center between Birmingham and Atlanta. But the difference is Talladega is right off of Interstate 20. So You've got exits every 10 or 15 miles all the way between Birmingham and Atlanta that have hotels. They've got restaurants. They've got grocery stores. They got everything you would need to support yourself. And since it's a major interstate, it's not a big hassle to drive from – you could stay in downtown Birmingham, and you could be at the racetrack in Talladega in 30 minutes or less because you've got the interstate there. That's not the case with a place like North Wilkesboro or even Darlington, for that matter, where at best, you've got a little county road if it's not just a little two-lane bike path that they drive cars down now, old Moonshiner roads, to get to North Wilkesboro. So that's the big difference here, and that's probably going to be one of the biggest growing pains going forward. SMI has a lot of control and authority inside the property line for North Wilkesboro Speedway. They can build a giant palace of a racetrack with 150,000 seats and a bathroom for every fan and their own personal concierge and concession stand and everything, but that doesn't mean anything if those fans can't get to and from the racetrack in a reasonable way. So they've done a lot of work already with the state of North Carolina to make this happen, and as they continue to develop North Wilkesboro to hopefully become a more modern racetrack that's able to handle a 2020s era NASCAR Cup Series event, they continue to work with the state of North Carolina to set realistic goals and make sure that what SMI wants to do with the facility is something that the state of North Carolina can support with the road infrastructure to get the fans safely in and out of there.
Yep. Something that I wanted to say that I forgot to say, too, is what I hope they don't do is I hope they don't do a thing where they bilk money out of the fans that come to that racetrack and charge like $8 for a bottle of water. That's not going to be a good thing to do if they want to build around North Wilkesboro. They need to find affordable options for the fans that are coming there without bilking them on hotels or food. So just another thought there. Okay, Jay, do you have another topic? Or no, we're kind of pretty close to the top of the hour here. Whatever we have, we'll have to wait for Wednesday, and I know we'll have a lot to talk about on Wednesday as well. So let's go ahead and do our roundtable. Mike, you go ahead and kick us off.
Sure, it's Mike_Ozell on Twitter, Mike_O on Reddit. I am really looking forward to talking to y'all on the next exciting episode of the Kyle Busch Chronicles scheduled for Wednesday, so I'll talk to you then.
Okay, Jay.
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And since Mike already let the cat out of the bag, I guess I'll just add to it. Come Wednesday, we're going to talk about Kyle Busch.
And all the late-breaking news from that. And hopefully, maybe we'll have the schedule out by then, too, for the 2023 schedule. A lot of folks seem to feel that will happen this week as well. I'm looking forward to the racing this weekend out of Bristol Motor Speedway, and with all of us talking about it, Jay and I will be doing the preview show on the Wednesday podcast that we'll put out late Wednesday afternoon, and of course our hot topic continuation that will take place on that podcast as well. I am Bamper Racing Site on Twitter. We are Bamper Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including BamperRacing.com, where we have our Bamper Racing Radio podcast player that's available for anybody who wants to tune in to hear the podcast of this show or our future show that's coming up on Wednesday evening. Again, don't forget the racing starts Thursday night, which is why we're doing a Wednesday podcast, and we'll continue with Friday night and Saturday night. There is no racing from NASCAR that will be taking place on Sunday, so you can plan your schedule accordingly with that regard. A big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate each of you for taking the time to tune in to hear what we have to say. We also had our guest, Christian Rose, on the show earlier tonight during the second half hour. Always gives us a great interview. And he'll be racing at Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend for the ARCA Menards Series on Thursday night. So he drives the number 42 for Cook Racing Technologies. He gave us some insight on what to expect from him for the remainder of this season and possibly into the 2023 season. So a lot to look forward to with Christian Rose and the West Virginia Tourism as his sponsor. So Thank you to him for being on the show. And to our Fan for Racing crew, both Jay Huseman tonight as well as Mike Orzel. You guys always make it a lot of fun, and I appreciate both of you for all that you do. And Jay, thank you for standing in for Sal Sagala tonight, and we'll look forward to talking to you again on Wednesday.
All right, we'll talk to you on Wednesday.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. That's a wrap. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday.